for sale is rising in Wisconsin. The latest report from the Wisconsin Realtors Association finds the supply of existing homes rose in July. It was the second straight monthly increase after more than a year of decline. Economist David Clark of Marquette University says increases in June and July are particularly important.
These are peak months for closing on homes. To see some improvement in inventories, even in those high-volume months, is a suggestion that maybe we have turned the corner a little bit.
Sales of existing homes dropped about 3% last month compared to July 2017. Home sales from January through July are down about 3% from the same period last year. A conservative advocacy group funded by the billionaire Koch brothers is launching a $1.8 million ad buy for Wisconsin Governor Scott Walker. Americans for Prosperity Wisconsin announced the TV, cable, and digital ad buy today. It's the latest in a series of seven-figure ad buys in the race that pits the Republican Walker against the state schools chief, Democrat Tony Evers. The ad quotes positive comments from Evers for Walker's most recent education budget, calling it, quote, pro-kid.
Support for NPR comes from Wells Fargo. Established 1852, reestablished 2018 with a recommitment to customers, working off the principles the company was founded on. WellsFargo.com/renew. Wells Fargo Bank, N.A. and Americans for the Arts.
It's the Morning Show on the Ideas Network. I'm Carrie Kaufman. If generations are defined by the great events that happen in the early parts of their lives, then the millennial generation is defined on one end of their maturation by the September 11th terrorist attacks, and on the other end by the election of Donald Trump. The millennial generation also are a group that most disdains the idea of American exceptionalism. So what is American exceptionalism, and did we ever live up to it in the first place? Or is it just maybe bullying by a fancy name? Bruce Gentleson is a professor of public policy and political science at Duke University. He wrote a piece in The Conversation called Millennials Are So Over U.S. Domination of World Affairs. Bruce, welcome back to the program.
Thanks. Good to be with you again.
I love the title of your piece. Way to sort of like channel the millennials there. So what are the takeaways from this study?
Well, it's interesting. One is that the first one is that I give credit to my editor for the title. They came up with it. But, you know, it's not, we often think about, are you internationalist or isolationist, as if it's, you know, one or the other. And millennials are not isolationists at all. Still over 50% support the notion of the United States having an active role in the world. But their view of what that role should be is different than other generations. As you said at the beginning, they don't buy into this notion. You know, it's not that they're not patriotic, they are, but they don't buy into this notion that somehow we're the greatest country in the world. You know, they kind of want to see the evidence, and in their lifetime, many of the things that we like to think about coming out of the Depression, World War II, were not part of their lifetime.
Mm-hmm.
The Iraq War, the Afghanistan War, the Great Recession, you know, were a part of their lifetime.
So let's delve into, first of all, millennials. When we say millennials, what age are we talking about?
Yeah, the way that demographers break it down, it's birth dates from 1981 to 1996. There's another generation, I think they're going to Generation Z, that's emerging after that, but they're a little young still to track their views. So the oldest would be, what, late 30s now?
Mm-hmm.
And the youngest would be early 20s.
So let's delve into this exceptionalism thing. Millennials aren't so keen on the idea of the U.S. being the greatest country in the world. It holds this unique spot in the world order. Expand on that. How do we define American exceptionalism?
So the two questions in the polls, and the polls were done by the Chicago Council on Global Affairs, who do a lot of foreign policy polling. One was this notion of whether or not we're the greatest country. And only 50% of millennials, which is, you know, still half, agreed with that. And other generations went as high as 77%. The other question was, should we be the, quote, dominant world leader? And here was only 25% of millennials, which was lower than any other group. They thought we should be a leader, but they saw the notion that others may have roles to play and actually have some good ideas out there, too. And the greatest country really is this sense that goes back to, you know, democracy at the end of the Cold War, democracy is spreading all over the world, capitalism is spreading, and that hasn't been happening. And instead, they see us tied up in wars and playing roles on some very questionable issues. And I should say this goes back before. It's not just a commentary on the Trump administration. Some of the data goes back to the Obama years as well.
So are they saying we should be isolationist? Or are they saying we should play differently?
Play differently. That's why, you know, the notion that 50% still say, okay, we're the greatest country. One of the ones that's really interesting is there was a question about whether globalization is mostly good for the United States. And broken down by generations, the 70% millennials was actually higher than any other generation. And if you think about it, it's kind of part of their daily lives, you know, whether it's iPhones or other sorts of things. They've actually traveled more. They're exposed to more diversity in their high schools, in their communities, than many of us were growing up. And so they kind of get it that it's not whether globalization is a, you know, bad thing. It's just, you know, they believe you've got to try to shape it. But they realize that there's nothing you can do to push that back. So that makes them, you know, fundamentally internationalists.
So they're fundamentally internationalists, and how do, was there anything in the survey that talked about how they might change things or what they're most worried about?
Yeah, their biggest skepticism is about military power.
Mm.
And only 44% of millennials considered maintaining superior military power as a very important goal. And again, the other generations go up as high as 70. And there too, if you think about it, they say, okay, as you said at the beginning, some people might think they'd really want that because they were born, you know, amidst, you know, 9/11 was part of their formative years.
Mm-hmm.
But they look around, they see two wars, both the longest wars in American history, both
mm-hmm.
almost two decades. They say, okay, we've got a lot of military power. We've been using it. It hasn't really been successful. Why should that be a really important goal? And why should that be the way that we define our global role? So that's probably the issue in which they're the most different, you know, as well as the general sense of the country. From the other generations. They just don't think military. It's not that they want to be weak, but they don't buy into politicians who are running around saying everything is about throwing more money at the military.
What do they think about NATO?
They're very supportive of NATO. They get it. You know, they get it that NATO has done a good job. Their support level there was 49%, which was right around some of the other generations. Some of the older ones went up to 70 or 72 because they, you know, go back to the Cold War. But they're really pro-alliances. They're pro the Paris Accord on climate change. They supported the Iran nuclear nonproliferation deal. And so they get it that alliances and agreements make sense. So you could say they lean more towards diplomacy than military power. They're not pacifists, but they really feel that there's been an overemphasis and over-dedication of resources to the military.
So I'd like to delve for a moment into why. Why do millennials feel this way, and how much of it is tied to political orientation?
Yes, there was some data on they're a little less Republican and conservative than other generations, but it really is, I think, the life experience. You know, we used to refer to, you know, an older generation as the Munich generation. They learned the lesson of Munich when mm-hmm. the British and the French tried to appease Hitler, and you don't do that sort of thing. And many of us, myself included, grew up or often referred to as the Vietnam generation. And I think theirs really is the, you know, Iraq, Afghanistan, Great Recession generation. And, you know, psychologists will tell us that things that happen in your formative years really shape the way you think about things. It's not totally set in stone. But this has been their life experience. If they're born in 1981, over half their life really has been, or close to half their life has been, with the United States at war.
Mm-hmm.
What other generation had to experience that? None.
And some people argue that America's role, that the U.S.'s role, the dominant role, is coming to an end. Does this survey reflect that, or does this survey reflect that the U.S.'s role is going to be simply changing?
Yeah, you know, in the article, I ended by saying some people are worried about this, saying, oh, my God, millennials aren't buying into the United States as, you know, running the world. And my comment is actually I think they're being very pragmatic and common sense. I mean, a lot of other things I've been writing and doing really talk about the way the world is changing. And it's not that the world is China's to run, but it's not ours to run either. It's a very different world in the 21st century where there's been a diffusion of economic power, limits on what military power brings you, as we've been saying. A lot of countries want to be at the table. And so the notion of shared leadership, which the millennials buy into, frankly, makes a lot more sense in policy terms than somehow everything revolves around Washington as if we're the center of the universe.
So the world is becoming a place where no one country runs it.
That's correct. We don't quite know how we're going to get order. It's, you know, a very unstable period, and there's pushing and shoving, and, you know, Russia continually is trying not only to hack our elections, but invading Ukraine, mm-hmm. supporting Assad in Syria. So it's a really transitional period, but if we think about what will work, it's not a reversion to the way the world was in the 1990s when the United States was singularly on top.
Bruce Gentleson is a professor of public policy and political science at Duke University. He was the senior advisor to the director of policy planning at the State Department between 2009 to 2011. Bruce, thank you for joining us today.
Thanks. Great to be with you.
Coming up next, we are going to talk about our questions for Milwaukee and how Milwaukee sees itself. It's the Morning Show on the Ideas Network. It's the Morning Show on the Ideas Network. I'm Carrie Kaufman. Milwaukee is the biggest and most diverse city in Wisconsin, but some residents there feel a disconnect from their elected representatives, especially on a statewide level. We're playing some audio from people who talked to our Beyond the Ballot reporters, but we want to hear from more people in Milwaukee. Do you think your elected representatives reflect you or your community? Do you feel like, as a Democratic city in a largely Republican state, you get ignored or blamed? Even if a Democrat won for the governor's race, do you think he would pay attention to you? 800-642-1234. You can email us also at ideas@WPR.org or tweet us at WPR Mornings. Bridget Bowden is the special projects reporter at Wisconsin Public Radio, and she project managed Beyond the Ballot. Welcome back, Bridget.
Thank you so much for having me.
And Eugene Kane joins us today. He's a former columnist with the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel. Eugene, thank you for being with us. Eugene's not there, so let's you and I start. Bridget, today we're going to be exploring Milwaukee, but give us a sort of a reminder of what Beyond the Ballot is.
Yes. So Beyond the Ballot is a community engagement project that the WPR News team is taking on this year. We are basically interviewing 500 people across the state and taking their temperature on various issues. We're trying to figure out what's important to them this election season.
And important to people in Milwaukee is what?
A lot of things. One of the things we're finding with this project is that people care about a wide variety of issues, depending on what impacts their lives. Mm-hmm. So specifically in Milwaukee, we're hearing a lot of things. We're hearing about education. We're hearing about roads, certainly yeah. budget issues, all sorts of things.
And one of the things that you found is that there's this theme coming up. Affirm respondents to one particular question. Talk to me about that.
So we are asking all of our interviewees the same six questions mm-hmm. so that we kind of get a baseline from everyone. So one of our questions is, do you feel like your elected officials represent you and your community or reflect you and your community? And in Milwaukee specifically, we hear a lot of no's. We hear a lot of people who don't really feel reflected by their elected officials.
And I want to kind of go through this. This is across the board. This is on the aldermanic level, the mayoral level, assembly and Senate representatives, as well as Congresswoman Moore and Governor Walker and those kinds of things. Yes?
I will say it depends person to person. This is a very, you know, complicated question with complicated answers. So certain people feel, you know, reflected by maybe some of their elected officials and not others, and other people feel reflected by none. But there is a general theme that we've found, but it does vary person to person.
We want to hear from people in Milwaukee today. 800-642-1234. We want to know what you feel about your representative. Do you feel like they see you, that they know you? Do you live in the city and feel like the state representatives really care care about the suburbs and not necessarily people who live in the city. Ideas at WPR.org is a way that you can email us. You can also tweet us at WPR Mornings. And you can call us, 800-642-1234. I'm told that we have Eugene Kane back. Eugene, welcome to the program, Eugene. Well, it says he's here. But anyway, Bridget and I are going to listen to some stuff. So we're going to turn right now to Elle Reese. What does she have to say about this?
So Elle lives in Milwaukee and says that it's important that politicians are present in all areas of the Milwaukee metro area. So let's take a listen.
Okay.
It's really important for them to listen directly to the community and not just operate off of assumptions they have about the community, because that happens a lot, especially in the Milwaukee area where segregation is a huge problem. An elected official may be able to serve like their area and maybe Shorewood and Whitefish Bay, but when you go on like the north side and the south side, they have no idea what the issues actually are, and so they're just trying to like focus on the lip service from people that don't know what they're talking about.
So people who don't know what they're talking about, she used the word, this is a segregated community. I'm assuming that Shorewood and Whitefish Bay, you know, I just moved here, is sort of the more affluent white part of the community, and the other, the north and south side are African-American, perhaps Latino.
So I think that that's exactly what she's saying. Milwaukee is obviously a large metro area, mm-hmm. with many different parts, and this is something that we've heard a few times.
People saying they don't come here. They don't come and talk to us.
Right.
They come and talk at us. And they don't really, or they don't even talk at us. They just make decisions for us.
We have heard that.
Eugene is here. Not yet. Okay, fine. So we're sitting here talking with Bridget Bowden, who is a special projects reporter for Wisconsin Public Radio. She is the project manager for the Beyond the Ballot series, and she's with us every Tuesday to talk about what they are hearing from people around the state. And today we are focusing on Milwaukee. Do you feel represented in Milwaukee? Give us a call, 800-642-1234. So Michael, our sidekick here, just gave me the thumbs up. I'm assuming that means you're here, Eugene.
Hey, how you doing?
Hey, welcome to the program.
Thank you for inviting me.
So we just heard a clip about, you know, somebody saying, look, this is a segregated area, and maybe our politicians will go to Shorewood and Whitefish Bay, but they don't really head to my area where I live. Do you find that?
Politicians in general, I think in Milwaukee, I think I've been here long enough to understand that a lot of folks in Milwaukee get the idea that they are not really, especially on a state level, they don't get much attention because of the makeup of the legislature right now, where Milwaukee is not a real big priority. Locally, I think, you know, there are some good politicians, particularly in City Hall, aldermen, who try to do the right thing, but I've often heard that the problem in Milwaukee is that once they get elected, you rarely hear from them anymore, mm-hmm. whether it's aldermen or county supervisors. There's not as much of connection for some reason, because I don't think they see Milwaukee as being as, you know, as active as they should be in terms of the elected officials doing what they promised to do during election time.
So do you find that, you know, people are active in the community and get out there, and then they get elected to a position, an aldermanic position perhaps, and then kind of get caught up in helping to run the city government, but don't pay attention necessarily to their constituents? Is that what you're saying?
I'm not sure if they get caught up in running the city government. But they
I'm being kind
here. But they certainly don't. Let's say the election season is always about promises, so and about how they're going to be in contact. I think the best way to explain it from my point of view is that during campaign time, the elected officials, those trying to be elected in Milwaukee locally, always make a lot of promises, because they know if they don't show up at that time, then they could end up, you know, losing their seat. Or if they're going for a first-time seat, they show up for the first time and make a lot of promises. I'm just thinking about the follow-up. I've heard from elected, from the constituents of elected officials, it's like hard to get a Milwaukee alderman on the phone or make an appointment, or even to, you know, get them to address individual needs if it's not a real hot and heavy campaign season. So I think that's indicative of a lot of politics.
So what do you think that Milwaukeeans want? What would, if I were running for alderman and I became an alderman, what would I have to do to earn their trust?
Well, I mean, to be honest, in elections, it's a ground game. You have to be able to, you know, to get your voters out and constituents out. And I'm not sure. Well, trust certainly is a big part of it. But I think what I've found in Milwaukee is a lot of it is name recognition. A lot of it is folks doing the groundwork of getting people out to the polls. And then after that, it's about follow-through. I think the follow-through is what's missing.
Right.
Because let's face it, in most elections, I'm not sure what the current figures are, but now the majority of people eligible don't vote. So
right.
I think the real emphasis has to be on those people who don't vote and why they don't vote, because I don't think they think there's anything in it for them.
Right. So as an alderman, and, you know, somebody who is elected, what would you like to see happen in terms of how they sort of like redesign their business model to serve their customers?
I guess my attitude has always been in politics that you get the kind of government that you deserve. I mean, if you're not really asking something of government all the time, there's a tendency to become complacent and to not to really follow through on things. And that happens in Milwaukee. I think the current political atmosphere environment kind of contributes to it because it's so partisan and so conflicted.
Okay,
right now,
we're going to take up that partisan issue in a moment. We are talking about Milwaukee and its relationship to its elected officials. Many people in Milwaukee say they don't really have a relationship with their elected officials. We'll be back in a moment. It's The Morning Show. It's The Morning Show on the Ideas Network. I'm Carrie Kaufman. We're zooming in on Milwaukee for today's Beyond the Ballot, the unmistakable theme that emerged when WPR's reporters asked the city's residents their thoughts on their representatives and how they reflect their community came out as largely no. Are you a Milwaukeean who feels that way, or do you feel the opposite? Do you wish you saw the governor or your U.S. senator more? Do you see them enough? What about Congressman Moore, and what do you feel about your local officials and how they understand your needs? 800-642-1234, ideas at WPR.org, or tweet us at WPR Mornings. We're sitting here in studio with Bridget Bowden, who is the special projects reporter at Wisconsin Public Radio, and she is the project manager of Beyond the Ballot. We are also on the phone with Eugene Kane, who is a former columnist with the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel. We do have a call, Marcus from Milwaukee. Marcus, welcome to the program.
Good morning. So I've actually found, being a Milwaukee resident, that it's very easy to stay in touch with Scott Walker and his policies, or rather the results of his policies. Drive down any city street in Milwaukee, and there's more than enough Scott holes to damage your car and send you to the mechanic to think about, you know, how he's representing you.
So you're in touch with Scott Walker because things are falling apart in your city. That's what you're saying?
He's more or less in touch with the suspension on my vehicle, but sure.
Okay, thank you, Marcus, for that. Bridget, we're going to turn now to somebody that you got some quotes from, Ebony Owens. What is her take on this?
So Ebony echoed the same sentiment that we heard earlier from Elle, and she had a request for people who are running for office this year.
Okay.
Can you please come to these communities you need to spend at least a few weeks, some weekends in these communities to see what you can do to help us become better. I feel like, again, you don't know what we go through unless you're here. You can't tell me what I go through somewhere else and think it's and think you know everything. So get our input on things a little more. Then maybe we could come together and we could, you know, brainstorm a few things. And that'll be better. Like, that'll be better for the community.
You don't know what we're going through unless you're here. And come talk to us and brainstorm. Come work with us. She's not even saying do what we tell you to do. She's saying come listen to us and work with us. Do you hear this a lot, Eugene?
Well, sure. Of course you do. I think the difference in Milwaukee is that in some cases, Milwaukee politicians are born and raised here. So there's really no real need to ask someone who is legitimately working in the community to come visit that community because they're always there. I know of several Milwaukee politicians who are basically from here. So if you're seeking to represent a community, I think that is like a bare minimum requirement that you have some kind of attachment to that community. It's not like, I guess, upstate where you're representing various towns or villages or whatnot. In Milwaukee, it's pretty cohesive in terms of the city, whether it's the north side or the south side or the west side. If you're from Milwaukee, you know some things about that community. So I think that's what I hear her saying. She doesn't want someone taking an outsider perspective and trying to represent that community. It's better to be from that community, to be already here and dealing with things that are happening in that community. It frankly, it surprises me that any politician on a local level would attempt to, you know, to sort of represent a community if they don't really have any real attachments to that community.
So what about the
problem with politics?
So what about, there are decisions that get made here in Madison by assembly people and senators who are not from Milwaukee, but they're making decisions about Milwaukee. They're making decisions about budget allocation. They're mm-hmm. making decisions about which roads get fixed. Might she be talking to them?
Yeah. I think that is the scenario that works best for me in terms of explaining why people need to come visit a community. It's because they don't live there. They don't really understand it. But yet they're casting votes and even coming up with policies that affect that community. So I can understand that. Frankly, I don't think, the folks who don't live in Milwaukee who are in the legislature or represent other communities, I don't think they ever have any real attachment or even real commitment to represent these communities. Because why would they? If they can get their votes from other places, I don't think they see the reason for coming to Milwaukee to find out what's happening. They are just sort of like, placeholders, people who are, they've always been not from that community, mm-hmm. so... I don't know. The whole thing about politics is that you do have to choose the people who represent you best. And these people who are being elected are not really being elected by people in Milwaukee. So you have to really get a greater understanding or commitment from them to do their homework or their research. And frankly, that's kind of – I don't see it happening in a lot of people.
So I do, though, want to explore this a little bit here, because down south, the southern past our southern border here, Chicago is a huge metropolitan area that kind of guides the rest of the state. The way Chicago goes, so the state of Illinois goes, and there are a lot of people in southern and western Illinois who don't really like that. Why doesn't that happen here? Milwaukee is a very, very large metropolitan area. And yet it seems like the rest of the state guides it.
You're saying the rest of the state guides Milwaukee?
Yes. The rest of the state makes decisions for Milwaukee, and Milwaukee doesn't seem to have any power over its own, future.
Well, I mean, to be blunt, I think it's because Milwaukee basically is the most diverse, the city with the most minority population. Probably some of the poorest areas are in Milwaukee. So, and otherwise, I mean, I've talked to white politicians from other areas and asked them about why they ignore Milwaukee or why they, you know, treat Milwaukee as like this, you know, stepchild, this poor stepchild. And I've frankly gotten answers that it's a racial component, that the black people in Milwaukee don't vote. They don't vote for me particularly, so why should I put out policies that, you know, are meant to help, you know, poor and underprivileged people? And frankly, I mean, we've had a tradition. We had a very popular governor, Tommy Thompson, years ago, who had a program or a policy where he would tell people, let's just stick it to Milwaukee and get these crowds, uproar, outrageous laughter and praise when he proposed something and said, well, hey, let's just stick it to Milwaukee. You know, those folks down there, they don't matter. That is something that has been carried over for, like, that's more than 20 years now.
Mm-hmm.
I don't see a change, and I don't see any statewide candidates who basically try to turn back the image of Milwaukee as being something very important or very vital to the state. Is always more like, you know, let's just put up with Milwaukee, and we all know it's kind of like a wink and a nod. We know what's happening down there.
We are talking right now about Milwaukee. Eugene Kane is a former columnist for the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel. We've got a Troy on the line who has a comment about what we're talking about. Troy, welcome to the program.
Yes, your guest just touched on it, but I think the kind of the big no-brainer is that our governor, like, there's actual quotes where to get into office, he's actually used the demonization and scapegoating of Milwaukee to cater to the rest of the state and to pit and us against each other. And it actually comes down to racism. An example would be, I know when they were talking about welfare, you know, it was like 70% of people on welfare in this state are actually Caucasian. But when they would portray, you know, in the media, it was mainly Fox News. They were interviewing, like, black people in Milwaukee, and they were talking about welfare. And it was like, it paints this picture, the governor likes to paint this picture that Milwaukee is a bunch of minorities running around doing drive-bys, and that's how they get their votes, by pitting actually everybody against Milwaukee.
Thank you very much, Troy. One of the things I want to pick up on really quickly, Eugene, is Troy said they were talking to. When he says that, he means us. He means journalists. You know, we're going to do a story on welfare. Let's go to Milwaukee and talk to black people, not talk to white people in rural parts of the state who are on welfare.
Well, I mean, anybody who does that has to, you know, to accept responsibility, because his statement is absolutely right in most states. The amount of people on public welfare are not, you know, minorities or black people. They are white people.
Mm-hmm.
So unless you expose that truth to people on a regular basis, you get caught up into these stereotypes. I mean, in Wisconsin, Walker has proposed drug testing for folks, or even though there's a low unemployment, but the drug testing for people on jobs, nobody ever seems to understand that, well, that will involve a lot of white people who use drugs, too. I mean, I think it's just accepted that he can put out a policy, and in people's mind, the object of that policy ends up being a dark-skinned person. I mean, people are not stupid. They pick up on these things.
We are talking about the city of Milwaukee. Mostly we're talking at it through the eyes of our Beyond the Ballot question, which is, Bridget Bowden, what is the exact question?
It is, do you feel like your elected officials reflect you and the community you live in?
Bridget has brought some quotes from people who we have talked to around the state for Beyond the Ballot, especially in Milwaukee, where the theme, as you are hearing, seems to be, no, we do not think that our elected representatives reflect us or even hear us or even, to be perfectly honest, know that we're here. We're going to be back to play some more clips that Bridget has brought to us, and we are going to be talking more to Eugene Kane, who is a former columnist with the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel. That's in a moment. It is The Morning Show on the Ideas Network. It's the Morning Show on the Ideas Network. I'm Carrie Kaufman. We're exploring how Milwaukee feels about state and local leaders as part of our Beyond the Ballot exploration. How is it that the biggest city in the state feels like the stepchild to the state's government? We're taking your calls, Milwaukeeans. Yes, it is morning. 800-642-1234, ideas@WPR.org, or you could tweet us at WPR Mornings. We're sitting here with Bridget Bowden, who is the project manager for Beyond the Ballot, and she joins us every Tuesday to talk about this. We are also talking with Eugene Kane, who is a former columnist with the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel. So we just ended talking about Governor Walker, Scott Walker, and what people in Milwaukee think about him, what they think he thinks about Milwaukee. You brought a quote where somebody was talking about Scott Walker.
Yes. So this is Atal Malik, and he did have specific thoughts to offer about Governor Walker. When we asked our question, do you feel like your elected officials reflect you? So here's what Atal said.
I really don't feel that he does. I feel like he represents a certain percentage of Milwaukee County. And I don't know how to word this, but I just don't feel that he represents the city as a whole. Governor Walker has a conservative way of thinking, and Milwaukee is a predominantly Democratic city, and I don't feel that he really, I shouldn't say care about the needs of the people in the city of Milwaukee, but I really don't feel like he can, he doesn't have any empathy towards the inner city of Milwaukee, the urban needs, if that makes sense.
That makes sense to me. There's a certain percentage of Milwaukee County. Isn't he from Milwaukee County? He's from the collar counties. A certain percentage that may be able to give him campaign donations, perhaps. What do you say to that? Eugene, you want to take that?
Well, I think the interesting thing is that I've been covering Milwaukee for like 30 years, and I actually remember covering Scott Walker when he was Milwaukee County Executive, where he came in on a wave of this reform movement against these tax, they had these drop benefits where Milwaukee County employees would get these huge employee buyouts, and Walker, there was a voter revolt against that, and Scott Walker rode that to become Milwaukee County Executive.
There was some corruption surrounding that, right? Wasn't there some corruption surrounding that that Scott Walker kind of got in the back door of?
Yeah. There are public officials who are accused of that, and he wasn't one, but he benefited from them being accused and moved out of office. The former county executive was Tom Ament, I remember. Mm-hmm. I'm doing this without notes, so you can, you know, help me out if I end up not remembering correctly. But my point is that Scott Walker knows Milwaukee. He represented a part of Milwaukee as a Milwaukee County executive. So it's not, I think, his basic treatment of Milwaukee is very deliberate to me, because I think once he started getting his political legs underneath him, he realized that the best way to go into prominence on a state level as governor was to do this thing where he was basically, you know, I think he was being very punitive towards the folks who had the least amount of power, the unemployed, the sick, the minorities, people who could not really benefit him politically, but he could use them as kind of like a whipping post, a whipping boy for other voters who are always looking for someone to blame. I think Scott Walker did a very politically astute thing years ago by kind of fixing himself up as this conservative hero, and we're not even talking about the anti-union stuff that he did.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, Walker, he knows my point is that we can't act like he doesn't understand Milwaukee. He knows Milwaukee. So during his term as governor, all of the stuff he's thrown Milwaukee's way has been deliberate, because he knows there's not a lot of people in the state who will basically protest or be annoyed if you're attacking Milwaukee all the time. Because, again, Milwaukee is their favorite whipping boy.
Well, we are talking about whether people in Milwaukee feel that their representatives represent them. That was an interesting take from Eugene Kane, a former columnist from the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel, who says that Scott Walker, at least, does understand Milwaukee, just doesn't particularly want to represent them. Bridget Bowden, you talked to another Milwaukee resident, Clara Fleming. What was her take on this issue?
So much like the other people we've heard from today, Clara would also like to see more people from her community working in government.
No, you can't fix a problem if you do not work directly and closely with the people who experience the problem. Cancer trials for new medication are not done on well people. They're done with people who have cancer. We need more people in the community. That's what I'm saying. If elected officials took their cabinet and made changes to it that incorporated people that you see on this block right now, then they would know truly what the issues are and know what the people need. They speak from a position of what they don't know. It doesn't affect them.
Eugene Kane, it doesn't affect them. If you want to study an issue, I'll avoid the cancer part, but if you want to study an issue, you really should go to the people and study that particular issue. But I think that what I'm hearing today is that the rest of the state doesn't really care to study the issue of Milwaukee.
It's partly that, and it's also partly the mechanics of politics, in that when somebody new gets elected, they have the responsibility to fill their own administration, and usually they go to their friends or even their sponsors or people who have given them money. I mean, this is a never-ending cycle. I mean, in government, the people in government, I hear her saying that it would be good to hire people from these communities, but sorry, these jobs have probably all already been promised to folks during the campaign. So, I mean, let's not be naive. It's not like when you get hired, when you get elected, you get to put in all the best people. You get to put in all the best people that you know who have worked with you on your campaign and who you've made promises to. I think that happens on both sides, but I just don't want us to get into a sense that, well, this could be solved if we just let everybody get involved in government and make decisions on the issues and the communities that they are very familiar with. It never worked like that. I don't think it will work like that in the foreseeable future unless there are drastic changes made.
So what do the drastic changes look like? What might a well-working city look like? And what are the first steps that you think the city can take to make that happen? Or the state can take to make that happen?
Oh, wow, you're putting me on the spot here.
Yes, Eugene, I would like you to get your PhD in urban politics right now and tell me. But no, seriously, like, you know, if you could change one thing or two things, what would it be that we would change?
Well, I think I talked to one of your producers, Bree, about this. I think you got to take politics out of it. You can't have it so that we got these corners marked conservative and liberal. And if you're in a conservative corner, you can't propose anything because the liberals will bash you. And if you're in a liberal corner, you can't propose anything because the conservatives will bash you. You just have to figure out what's best for all people. And I sincerely mean it. I mean, one of the things I have become kind of dissatisfied and actually kind of turned against in politics lately is how, you know, there's just no attempt to get away from the partisan side of it.
Right.
Even on state and local, well, not so much local levels, because Milwaukee doesn't really have as strict a partisan divide as you find in other governments, but clearly on a state level, we got a bunch of Republicans in power who are not willing to do anything because it'll be perceived as being weak and given into the Democrats. So, you know, as long as you have that kind of mindset, I don't see how you do anything positive in terms of health or crime or taxes or
Well, okay, we're gonna end on that note. I'm gonna end on the let's end bipartisanship note. Bridget, you have the last word here.
Yeah, I just want to add that the Beyond the Ballot project is in no way a scientific poll. You know, we heard from four people today, right, and those were their opinions of those four people. So if you want to share your thoughts, go to our website, wpr.org/ballot, and we'd love to hear what you have to say on this issue.
Bridget Bowden is a special projects reporter at WPR, and Eugene Kane was a former columnist for the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel. Thank you both for being here. It's The Morning Show on the Ideas Network.